Hey guys, it's Danielle with the More Than Graphics podcast, and today I want to tell you something that we learned. So we learned something special from this bonus episode with Jeannie Dawkins, founder of The Parent Cipher. We learned that during a live recording to be more aware of echoes. We went ahead and removed as much as we can from this recording. It's all been noted. And with that, we bring you this special bonus April episode of the More Than Graphics podcast with less of your co-hosts and more of the gems of our guest.
But here's the thing. What is better for your child? However you are in a relationship, that's how your daughter and your son is going to treat someone else in the relationship. So are you causing more harm than good? Because if you take it, your child is saying, if you're a woman and you're taking it, your son is going to say, whoever I'm with is going to take this. And if you have a daughter, your daughter is going to say, I'm supposed to take this. And you have to be aware of that. And you have to figure out, like, let it go, man. Let it go and breathe.
The MTG podcast is a virtual space for women and men in the tech and creative industries.
Tune in as we put it all on the table, sharing authentic life truths as we sustain and empower each other in search of our tribe.
We're more than a designer. We're more than our name badge. We're more than the work we produce.
Welcome to the More Than Graphics podcast.
We're that tribe. So today we have a very special guest in regards to resilience.
Jeannie Dawkins is a single mother of four, two grown and two school aged, and has over 19 years of being a parent advocate of special needs children. Additionally, she's an international speaker, best-selling author, host of the Parenting Cipher podcast, and parent confidence strategist. Each of Jeannie's children has various diagnoses of autism spectrum disorder, dyslexia, dysgraphia, and ADHD. Despite this, she has successfully enrolled them in top-tier private schools, three of them with partial scholarships, and her youngest tuition is federally funded. In 2019, she and her youngest sons traveled to Dubai, London, and Paris with various challenges and limited resources to expand her children's worldview and not limit them because of their individual diagnoses. As an educational advocacy specialist, Jeannie's mission is to help parents achieve a balanced life and overcoming and home in a way that empowers parents and children. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
This is very unique to us, Jeannie, as much as it is for you. Having to interview in face masks, I'm sure, is not a goal we really wanted for 2021. For those who personally don't know your journey, as many of our listeners do not, can you share a little bit about what that was like to take your children out of the country and say, you know, yes, you can. I really want to hear that because that's giving me all the feels.
I went out of the country when I was 16. Like, I'm actually the first member of my family to go international as a traveler. And I won a scholarship for a writing contest. And I went to Senegal, Morocco for 2 weeks. So one of the things that I had to sit with as a special needs mom is that moment when you realize that you have lost yourself. And what is it that you like to do? And I always wanted to travel. So I was like, let's go to Dubai. So I had gotten these cruise tickets. I was like, we're going to Dubai. My parents was like, really? I was like, let's go. My parents were like, okay. And it was like a week tour. So we went to Dubai, Oman, Kassab, and some other little islands. But the thing was interesting about it was that I like to hype my kids up. So I learned to start bringing them in on what's important to me and then asking them what's important to them. So, you know, we kept talking about traveling and their schools were so supportive because they actually created these boards for them that told them what they were going to do at each moment. So you're going to get up in the morning, you're going to get on the plane. The plane is going to be this long. You're going to eat, you're going to get off, you're going to get on the ship. I mean, like every day, the school was awesome. Like every day it told them what they needed, what they were going to do, which helps with anxiety. And when we got there, it was like a, oh my God moment. Because I saw, you know, other families with special needs kids, I didn't see any people of color with special needs kids. And I started to think about how it's not just traveling internationally is not just a thing where we limit ourselves because we think of how much money it is. When you have special needs kids, it's a whole nother conversation about them being scared, you know, about them panicking. I mean, it's just so many different things. And I just kind of did not sit on that. I just kind of just try to keep focusing on what can we do? What can we do? And I kept talking to my kids about it to the point where they were like, when are we leaving? When are we going? And, you know,
I love that.
Just what's up, mom? Where are we going? So we went to the Middle East, and it was so much fun. Right. 2 months later, we went to London, we went to London and Paris. And by then they were seasoned travelers. And when I travel, I don't like to be a tourist. I'm not a tourist when I travel. So I do a bunch of research and I'm like, we're all over the place. So we were going to motorcycle shows. We were going to the museums. We were going to local neighborhoods. And it really helped them be comfortable with themselves and to step out of that box of fear that a lot of kids, period, but especially our special needs kids, had that anxiety piece. It really helped them become secure in themselves. We had one incident, and that's when we were leaving Dubai. My son is 13, but he looks like he's 16. And they pulled him to the side. And he was like, mom, mom, mom. And I was like, oh my, it's that moment as a Black mom, like, oh my God. Just forget my son. But they were so nice. They realized that he was a kid. You know, he was like, mom, mom, my mom has it. Like, it's between his tone and everything. So they pulled him to the side and they were like, mom, can you come over? And, you know, they calmed him down. And just the way that they treated him with respect and understanding, it really made me feel like so good. I mean, you know, living in the United States, you know, we don't have that. You know, immediately was like, oh my God, you're trying to hurt my kid.
Yes, right. Exactly. We about to go gorillas on somebody, right?
Exactly. But I just had no limits. What I try to do is I had a moment in time between my divorce. My ex-husband has bipolar disorder. So let me just go put that out there. He has bipolar disorder. And for everyone who's ever had a spouse with bipolar disorder, I'm going to frame it as though you learn to create a world within a world for your children. And the thing about creating a world is that sometimes you don't know you created it. I like to say the mind is a wonderful thing. It protects you, but you don't know that it's protecting you. So if you don't know when you turn it on, you don't know when to turn it off. And I had this moment where we lived in this world where I was like ultra positive, but our reality was dark. And when we got divorced and he left, me and the kids, we were still acting like we were still in this other world. And so I started doing a bunch of positivity. Like I started reading The Secret. Every time something bad would happen, I would reframe. Like, you know, at one point my ex-husband had so many tickets on my car, I lost my license, and I had my license when I was 16 years old. So now I'm at 35. My car's repo. I don't have a license. Wow. You know, the universe works in a mysterious ways. So I ended up getting like a raise. But it'd be like 4 o'clock in the morning and I have to catch the bus. And I'd be like, oh my God, I have to catch this bus. But I would say, you know what? No, we won't. You know what? I'm so grateful that this bus stop is only a block from my house.
Right? Yes. Yes.
Like, that's what I would always do. As soon as I'm bad, I'm like, come on now. What are we grateful for in this moment? So as I started to raise my other younger children, people will try to limit you. Right. We already have a cultural limitation as it is, you know, even though we don't want to look at it and say, oh, I do. But we do, you know, and it's OK. But we have to realize that we have them. So I started to reframe just that part of my life. And then when my kids start getting diagnosed, I had my moments of like, nah, nothing wrong with them, because I don't need any more. Like, it's a lot, you know, it was a lot.
Right.
And he's like, I don't need anymore. And then I realized, for real, people say, school systems say they're going to help you, but you don't even know what kind of help your child needs, because no one sits down and explains to you really what's going on. So you say you help me, you're saying you're helping me, but you're really not helping me. You know, I sit down with you and you tell me all the things that you're going to help my child with. And I ask you, it sounds like he's always going to be 2 years behind. And you're like, oh, yeah, OK, yeah, that's fine. That's a given. No, we won't. No, that's not acceptable. So I started to reframe even with my kids. So I started to change my language with them. So like, we don't say don't. I can't. No, we don't say we can't. We don't say it's hard. We say it's challenging. You know, when the school told me he would always be 2 years behind, I said, that's okay. Because right now in this moment, I don't know enough to really advocate, but I'll be back. I'll be back. And I use my health. I use my health insurance. I start talking to doctors outside of the school system, and I came back. Okay, let's rock it. Let's go. And you gave me everything I wanted, but I also had someone outside who was helping my son read. His self-confidence shot. Wasn't talking to anybody. He wasn't talking to other kids. Because one thing about kids with autism, depending on what their diagnosis is, they're fully aware they're not where they're supposed to be. Like, they know I should be reading and I can't read. So no, don't put me in a position where I have to show everybody I can't read. So he wasn't participating. He wasn't talking. He was withdrawn. I'm like, this plan you have going on is not going to help him. I research reading programs. We use that. Let's just put it this way. In less than 2 years, he was not on grade level, but he was 2 years advanced with the extra person. But it's this place where people are always going to try to tell you, you can't. You can't. You're going to tell yourself you can't. Let's be real. When things started coming in on you, it's like the walls are closing in because your life has all of these different pieces moving on. You have to figure out, like, how can I center myself? Let me see. Cicely, you still here? Dad, yours frozen. Okay. So, you know, I always try to make sure that I take what I've been through and give my kids a positive spin. And the thing with resilience is people are going to be people. Okay, now if you're 40, I'm going to age myself real quick. I'm 45 years old. So if you've been doing something for 30 years, it's not like you're going to wake up in the morning and be like, life has changed. I'm a new person. No, it don't work. It don't work like that. Every day you're going to have to check yourself. You will be on this even keel where everything's rocking. Everything's perfect. You're doing all the things. And then all of a sudden, stuff just stopped dropping. it just stopped dropping. And you're like, but I was doing so good. And that's the moment for me. What I do is I started to put like markers or tells in my life for me to check in with myself. So, you know, life is going to throw you a lot of balls, like boom, boom, boom. But the thing is, you have to be resilient. And resilience doesn't look like perfection. Resilience means that you have to acknowledge that you're a person and you have habits. Your habits are not changing. What's changing is your awareness of your habits. So when you're on this, like everything's going smooth and you're like, yes, my life is so turned up. And then you're like, it seems like the next day is like turned down. You're like, what just happened? What just happened is that somewhere along the line, you stock a thing. That's it. So you have to figure out what that thing is. I am in the moment. So this is great about this podcast right now for resilience. I'm in a moment of testing my own resilience because I have so many moving pieces. And you would think coming out of COVID, it would be like, yes. Okay, no. Coming out of COVID, I realized it has me stressed out. I was like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, it's stressful because, you know, everyone's like, did you get your shot? Did you get your shot? And I'm like, no, man, like, I don't think I want to be Tribune right now. I don't. I need other people to go first. You know what I'm saying? Shoot. You know, and but it's a stressor. And the things with stressors are they trigger you in your moment of excellence. You know what I'm saying? You know, and that's the thing you have to realize about who you are as a person, how we are as people. You can be living your best moment. And as soon as the stressor comes in, you're like, it's like, and you don't even know that it's bothering you. Like you're thinking everything's rocking, but then all of a sudden stuff stops falling apart. And it's because that stressor that was like hitting you, nudging you every time you talk to somebody, they talking about it. You're not acknowledging that it stresses you out, because as Black women, We real good acting like that just didn't happen. We real good at saying, you know what? I'm going to have to shelf that because I can't even look at that right now because my plate is running over. Right? And the thing with the running over plate is our plate is running over, but we are not taking care of those little pieces that keep us running. That's the thing. So when we talk about resilience, the most important piece is making sure that those pieces that you need to keep yourself mentally sound are still running. And that has always been a challenge for me. I've gotten to the point now where I ask myself, I was like, yes, everything's yes. Yes. Can you? Yes. Can you? Yes. Then all of a sudden, no. I was like, now I won't do that. And I wouldn't even tell people no. I would be like, I'm the type of person, I would be like, you know, I think I got something else to do. You know, I'll see. Now I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. And I said it to somebody, they were like, what? You heard me, I don't want to do that. I don't, You get to say no. That's part of resilience. Like, I don't even know. I would say that's like, if it was like a one and a two, for us, one is saying no. Say no. My brother said that he read this book and he said that the guy told him that sometimes saying yes to other people is saying no to yourself. So you have to check in with yourself and saying, me saying yes to you, is it saying no to myself in any way? There's no such thing as free time. So sometimes we say yes to people because we're like, oh, I got all this time in the world. No, you don't. Mm-mm. Time is precious. Time is precious. So if you're saying yes to this person for an hour of your time, let's be real, my sisters, and you got kids, that hour of the time of that time that you're giving somebody else could be an hour. You sit your butt down with a cup of coffee and tea and a good book, a Netflix, a bath, a shower. Yeah. That's an hour for yourself. Because I don't know about everybody else, but I'd be like, it's time to go to bed at 9 o'clock because mommy is off duty at 9. But if you work in a regular job, let's be honest. Okay, yeah. You take kids go to bed at 9, but what time you gotta go to bed? What time you gotta go to bed?
11, 10:30, 9:30.
Right. And then that's when I know for myself, that's when I fall into the hole of go to bed 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 1:30. And it's like, sis, I had to start using my watches and tech. So stuff would turn off on me. I'd be on a phone call with people and the phone go click. Be like, click. I was like, I'm sorry, my phone says I go to bed.
That's hilarious. I think I've been in very similar places where I literally have had a device on and it already has a timer on it. And if once it's gone, it's gone. I use it for my kids and it works for me too.
That's, you know, it's during these times, And just during life, like I look at my lifespan of events, your life really is a series of events. Okay. And this is the thing I always say about my series of events. What you go through is not about you. It's about the person that you're going to touch. And it seems kind of like, ugh, but I don't want none. But what makes you special? What makes you special is the ability to be resilient in this moment. For you to kind of like do what you have to do, not in perfection, but to get stuff done, you know? And when I found out my kids had diagnosis, because what the thing with me is, I'm all about educational equity, okay? So I am really hardcore. I know that there are public schools that function like private schools, but they are private schools and they're different levels of private schools. For me, it was putting my kids in top tier private schools just so when they time for them to go to college, they have a better rate of acceptance in getting the money. Okay, so what I didn't understand was that just because it's a top tier school doesn't mean that there's some questions you ask that they're going to answer them fully. With my daughter, I kept saying, something's off. It's 30 minutes to do a homework assignment. She's sitting there for hours. And they would say to me, we don't do that. Like, just like that. We don't do that. I don't know what that means. It's developmental. So I went and looked it up. I was like, WebMD symptoms. Right?
You said WebMD. Lord, people should get all the way back. You millennials don't know nothing about no WebMD. No,
they don't. They'd be like, Alexa. We'd be like, can I get a dictionary? Dictionary, what is that?
Oh my gosh, I love it.
But I didn't take no. When you start seeing things affect your child, you can't take no. You're going to have to do a little bit of digging. And that's what I did. And at the same time, like my kids, so my stepkids and my biological, like their ages are crazy. Okay. So she's going to ninth grade. You know, my other son is like in fourth grade. Right. And he's in a private school. Actually, he was four and he was in a private school and they were calling me like, Miss Dawkins, do you understand him when he talks? Yup. Then I was like, wait, but do I really? No, I think I do. Like, that's that moment as a parent, you have to check in with yourself because you just know as a mom. And I really, so I asked my mom, I was like, do you understand him? My mom was like, nope. I was like, but here's the difference. In private schools and predominantly white schools, they will do a pre-screening for children in speech. Because speech is not just articulation ability to talk. Speech also affects your ability to read and comprehend. Top tier private schools test these kids in preschool. Most public schools, especially inner city, they do not pre-screen at all, right? Instead, we're going to do reading intervention program. That's what they want to do. But how are you effectively using a reading intervention program when you're not actually testing the kids? And then you're wondering why the kids are still failing. You know, when I was doing my research on reading programs, I realized that most inner city schools use a dyslexic-based reading program, which requires them to have 30 minutes, 5 days a week. Most reading intervention they use in the school, they don't use it that way. But if you think about it, if you have 10 kids in a reading intervention class, you're not testing these kids with dyslexia. It might be five of those kids who are true dyslexics. Those five kids are not going to make any type of advancement because you're not giving them the same amount of time. That's something I found with my son. When they kept trying to keep him where he was, even though we had these tests, I had to break it down to them like that. And one of the things that private schools actually helped me really understand is what's missing in private schools. I mean, in public schools. As parents, what are we not getting? You don't get conversation. You don't get onboarding. No one tells you what your child's diagnosis is. No one tells you, okay, look, unless times have changed, ain't nobody talk to me about college to 12th grade. Public school, private schools, they're talking to those kids about college and middle school, transition period. Ninth grade, they're talking to the parents, telling the parents, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to start, you know, put this in place. I did all the things that the private school said. My son applied to 15 schools. He got accepted to 15 schools. That's the difference. And one of the things that I'm passionate about is helping our community realize what's missing and teaching you how to make that happen for your child. And it's always about information and being in resources and actually having someone to talk to. But the other part of my business is about you and your kids, not in schools. No one's having a conversation with you about, hey, sis, are you taking care of yourself? No. Mm-mm. Hey, sis, you know, are you having some issues with your son? Or not even issues, just having like regular conversation where you don't feel alone. You know, because I know for me, I had these moments where my family, I wasn't even talking to them about my kid's diagnosis because I was feeling judged. Like every time I would say, you know, he doesn't mean any harm because he has sensory issues, my brother would be like, I think you're just making excuses. Right. You know, and you don't have anybody to talk to. Even when I had my first, when they said my son had autism, the therapist said, go home and think about it. And I was like, my first thought, okay, is social media does not do justice to autism at all. What they do is they pick the lowest term, the autism neurological disorder, severe disorder, to tell us that's what autism is. So immediately when she said autism, I was like, my kid don't bang his head on the wall. That's immediately what I thought. And I actually had to dig. And the medical terms don't help you either, because you're like, no, that's not my kid. It was actually another parent talking about a day in the life that made me embrace it. But even with that being said, ladies, let me tell you, every time I turned around, I felt like someone was saying he had more. So it went from autism to, you know, he has undeveloped jaws. You know, I'm like, okay. It took almost a year for me to even take him to the ortho because I was like, no, because he don't have all his permanent teeth. I'm just saying, I know I'm totally aging myself because, you know, it's some concepts when we were growing up that when you try to go to an orthodontist, they'll always say, you don't have your permanent teeth. So I was like, why you keep saying you need to go? They actually had to show me the x-rays for me to embrace it. So he had to have an appliance that stretched his jaws and make them even. I was paying money for a therapist, a speech therapist. No, she was actually helping him read. And she kept saying to me, I need you to take him to a development optometrist. And I was like, no. Mm-mm. She was like, you need to stop paying me and you can pay him. And I'm like, no. Mm-mm. So she's like, I've taken him as far as I can go. And I'm just like, yeah, okay, no. So finally I went, and apparently she was talking to him about me forever. So he was like, why did it take you so long to come? And you know what I said? I said, because I didn't want nothing else to be wrong. And he was like, I understand that. And I was like, you know, that's how I feel. I just felt at that moment, even now. Took him for his feet. They were like, his feet are underdeveloped. He needs reconstructive surgery. Dude. But by the time we got to the feet, I just started calling him my $1 million baby. Like, you my $1 million baby. And we're going to be all right. But when you have more than one, sometimes it could be like a cascade. And one of my resilience tools with that is, what's the one thing we can do a year? What's the one thing? per child? What's that one thing? Is this the time that we're going to fix the feet this year? For my youngest son, is this the year we're going to go ahead and, you know, do orthodontist for him, work for him? And my kids, we would have these conversations and my kids would say stuff like, I'm so sorry, mommy. And I'm like, why are you sorry? I'm sorry you had to take me to the doctor. Oh no, we okay, we driving. But I realized that they could see how tired I was. And I started to really think about, as parents and as children, we're on this journey together. But what ends up happening sometimes is we silo ourselves from our kids. So we are going through a lot of things, but we're not talking to them. That allows them to kind of make up their own stories. Kids are who they are, so it's always their fault. No matter what happens, it's their fault. So I started talking to them more. But I also realized I had to pick. I had to plan and I had to pick. And I also need to start running around like everything was burning and everything was urgent. And I had to find myself. And that's like, if I was to give anybody advice on resilience, it is that moment where you have to realize who you used to be before kids. I like to call it your original self. Okay. What is the things that you like? What do you think you used to do? Can you do one of those things so you won't burn out? You know, and what's the experience of not just yourself, but your kids' experience of you? You know, so you have to figure out like what's the one thing you can do to stay sane. And to be honest with you, look, it ain't gotta be big crap, man. It could be like I be buying coffee all the time, like I got all kind of boutique coffee. I got boutique tea. And I sit there with my coaster and my cup in my corner. I got this half chair, sit in my half chair. And I drink my coffee and I drink my tea with my scones and my biscuits that I order because they taste good. And I want to feel hearty torty. Okay.
I love all of this. Say it louder for the people in the back. Yeah. I mean... I really love a lot of the things that you're saying in terms of when we talk about, you know, advocacy for children and then for ourselves. That's that original story part. That is the truest thing I think any special needs mom needs to hear. What were you like before you had kids? And how are you connecting your now to your past? How are you connecting those parts of yourself that you didn't think you were capable of doing to the parts that you currently are doing that you are capable of doing? It's really connecting those dots. It's that synergy between the two that helps kind of revive and move on to the next step. And that's what helps us be more resilient as moms, period, as special needs moms, especially. We have to pick up those pieces and remind ourselves over and over again, just as we have to remind our kids over and over again. Yes, I can. We're capable of doing this and I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep trying again. I love that. Thank you.
So listen, what's so great about kids is that they are still becoming, so they don't have our habits. So as you are like picking up these good habits and you share with your kids, they put you in check. So what I tell my kids about money is I always say, we don't say we broke. We don't say we don't have. I say, that's not in the budget right now. That's what I say. That's not in the budget right now. Let's see if we can, you know, sort it out. And like I said, once again, we are creatures of habit. So no matter how fabulous, centered, you think you are, that is not your original self. So when things start falling apart, you're going to go back to your default. But what's so great about kids is because they don't actually, their default is being created. They will check you. I said to my son, he was like, Mom, when we get this car? And I was just like, I don't have no money. He was like, we don't never say we don't have any money, Mom. You know, what you need to say is like, that's not in your budget right now. But let's think about this car. Now, what kind of car do you want? And I'm like a little kid. Well, I want an Acura. Okay. So how much money would you need to save to get the Acura? And I'm like, well, I don't know. He said, well, let's think about it. Is it a little bit? Is it a lot? Now, mind you, my son at this point, he's like 11 years old. So I'm sitting here being coached by 11-year-old. And I'm like, is he coaching me? And I'm like, thank you. Because I wasn't aware that at that moment in time, I had kind of like defaulted around some things. You know, we always talk about money mindset. you know, you have to have it. But the reality of, depending on how old you are, what your experiences in life, you have a kind of a default, and you have fear too. Sometimes that fear keep you, it'll keep you, like, even though you're like, I can do all the things, I'm gonna be rich. But there's a part of you that's scared of being rich. You know, there's a part of you like, oh, and all of a sudden you like, something bad gonna happen. You know, but your kids will keep you centered. And that's one thing I do like about my journey with my kids and me actually tuning into myself and my behaviors is that they're able to kind of help me pivot when I kind of get, like, even traveling. I always talk about travel because I love it. And my son, when are we going out the country again? And I'm like, but mom, we talked about it. And I'm like, you're right. I'm gonna start planning. You know, he's like, when are we gonna get the RV? So now he starts saying, so now he brings his phone with the RV rental place. You know, like, okay, look, I found one for this many. This rate.
I love but it.
What's great about your kids is that when you share who you are originally, not mom self, they will pick up on that. And whenever you kind of get lost, kids are kids and they don't forget. Well, look, they don't forget what they, you know, the things that they like, they don't forget things. So they'll come back to you and be like, remember you said, you said.
Oh, yes.
And,
yes.
And tune into that, you know, and because of my moment of, I like to call it breakdown. It's that moment where I felt so tired and I realized that I was treating my kids like they were broken. Like that's how it could come across. And it wasn't that I thought my kids was broken. What it was, I felt guilty as a parent. I felt as though I had let my daughter down because I didn't ask enough questions. I felt like with my son, because I felt so bad about her, now it's kind of like you had this redo space. And I jumped in at 110 and I was burning out. And I wasn't, I mean, like when I say ladies, I'll be burnt out, tired, look tired, dress tired, crazy, just tired. I mean, even my job, I hated my job. And when I had my second son, I'm gonna tell you, when you happy of being broke, then at your job, there's a problem. And you got money coming, I quit that job the next day, I got another better job. So sometimes in that note, so here's a resilience, another resilience tip. Sometimes you got to let go of the thing that you have to make space for something else, because it's waiting for you to let go. If you can't let go, it's like, it's no space for me. It just isn't.
Oh man, I love that. We said something very similar in our recent episode, and that was just dead on set. We cannot take on new things if we don't let go of the other things. Sometimes you gotta let things die so you can have a new rebirth somewhere else.
And that's and you gotta notice it. And that's another thing. You have to notice it. So anything, look back, reflect on your moments where you were like, man, I'm just tired, I'm gonna have to let this go. Ask yourself what happened next. Look. My ex-husband left. That's a whole nother story for another podcast, okay? He left, I let it go. I kid you not. My life is so turned up, like, as soon as he left, as far as, like, my ability to think and breathe and be happy, you know? Because sometimes you try to hold on to things because of your upbringing. And it could go either way. It could be my parents are together. My parents have been together for so many years. You know, I have to make this work. It could be my parents are not together and I want to create something different for my child. So I must endure. But here's the thing. What is better for your child? However you are in a relationship, that's how your daughter and your son is going to treat someone else in the relationship. So are you causing more harm than good? Because if you take it, your child is saying, if you're a woman and you're taking it, your son is going to say, whoever I'm with is going to take this. And if you have a daughter, your daughter is going to say, I'm supposed to take this. And you have to be aware of that. And you have to figure out, like, let it go, man. Let it go and breathe. Yes. Like,
Yes.
Lessons.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I absolutely 110% agree. If we had all the 5 stars right now and all the Dragon Balls and all the universe, it would go to you in that moment right there, because that was it. We have to learn not to repeat the patterns of our past. And when we do repeat those patterns of our past, it is an example to the ones who are watching us.
Yeah.
And that is so dope. I so appreciate that honest truth. We need more of it. Mothers, period. We just need more of that. Women, period, in the creative and tech fields, we need more of that. We need to better understand that our habit creates tomorrow. So yep. If our habits are misconstrued or corrupted in any way, or just kind of wandering, 9 times out of 10, tomorrow's going to be the same way. So we need to find a way to straighten that out and make some better habits for ourselves so that we're not repeating our past, we're not repeating our trauma, we're not repeating our anxieties and our fears. So rah, rah, rah. I am right here with you, Jeannie. That is amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
And then when you have that moment of awareness, you're like, oh my God, I did this. Breathe. Because once again, I'm not going to go into the story, but one of the habits I had when my ex-husband left is he bipolar. Okay. So he would come by my house at night and he would call. So I started this habit of turning my lights off all the time. I would be in the house and be pitch black and I just wouldn't answer the phone. So you fast forward and it's like he's gone. It is like dark. And I lived like that for like 5, maybe 6 years before I started actually being on Zoom calls. People were like, why your house so dark, right? And me and the kids recently moved to another house and it's brighter. And my son is always pulling down the shades and I feel bad. I'm like, why he pulling down the shades? And I'm like, he's pulling down the shades because the majority of his lifetime, when he's in the house, I've always made it dark. It's that moment for me to check in. But of course, I feel bad because parental guilt is real. Don't let no one else tell you that. OK. And also one thing about parental guilt is when things are happening with your child and yourself as a parent, be aware the difference between something really being an issue or you just feel bad because you should have, could have. Because the moment, the faster you can get over that, the faster you can make a shift into something better, you know. And for me, it's just like, okay, I'm aware this is why he does it. So now I have to be firm. So I'll open the blinds. He's like, oh, it's too much light. I will bring him down a little bit, but you need light in your life. You're okay. You know, it's going to be all right. We're going to leave these lights on. We're going to open up these blinds. We're going to let the sunlight in, because I know he doesn't know any better. And that's what he's used to. But sometimes you got to make people make a shift, like just like life makes us shift when we don't want to. You know, as a parent, you had that power. You know, I like the parent power.
This is a huge lesson in us, women who are listening, women who are creatives, women in tech who need this type of support on this level. I'm not the only one. Cicely's not the only one. So, and we know that. So mm-hmm. Our listenership is really, really, really vibing. We are so enriched by the wisdom that you are sharing with us today. How can people get more information about what you do, the resources you provide, and just more about your journey?
You can check out the parentingcipher.com. So parenting, and then the word cipher is CIPHER.com. And everything's there, my blog, my podcast, how you can work with me. Mm-hmm. Any freebies that I have, get on discovery call with me, because I'm gonna tell you what, I don't charge for discovery calls, and you never leave a call with me without something that you can actually do yourself. And if you say y'all have, get on a call with me 30 minutes so we can work it out. So at least you can have a starting point, because you're not alone. Questions they start to ask you, you don't know the answers, or the questions that you, how you receive it is as though someone's saying that you're not a good parent and you drop the ball some way. So that's why I'm a confident parenting strategist, because I give you the resources and the tools to show up for yourself and for your child. Always remember that you are parenting imperfectly. Don't have to be perfect to be a parent. You know, you just show up every day. You do the best you can. And always remember that how you treat yourself is how you're treating your child to treat themselves.
I love it. Thank you so much. Cicely, do you have any special thoughts or anything additional you want to add as we wrap up this episode?
I've been on the journey with you and your kids, because it's very similar to the journey that I, as an autism mom, as autism mom of a child of color. So I just really appreciate why, and struggle's real, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. That's what I've told anyone who has an autism diagnosis. We're all close at the beginning, but then there are so much things on the other end of that.
There is. I love it. I'm so glad we were able to do this, even though it was live and all the cool kind of crazy. It's kind of dying down now, as you can see. We're toward the end of the live event, but this is why we did this, because we knew we had the time to make this conversation happen. Jeannie, you are worth every dime, every second, every minute, every ounce of wisdom you have shared. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just like that, the episode ends, but the convo has just begun.
Thanks for listening to the MDG podcast.
We want to hear from you. If you enjoyed our podcast, give it a review on your listening app of choice. Continue to follow our page
and look out for bonus content releases throughout the year. This podcast is produced by Octane Design Studios. Until next time.